Should be a fun one, Chris, and everyone's playing nice at this point. We're not into mid-playoff series form between the coaches. Just lots of compliments to go around here in October.
Yes, and that's normal. I mean, John Cooper is a noted Mitch Marner fan. He's gushed about him in the past, and so I wasn't surprised to see him mention him as part of that comment. And you know, it's kind of an interesting timing for the matchup with, you know, both the Leafs and Lightning having lost two in a row. You know, each of them lost one of those two games and still got a point out of it. But, you know, one of these teams will be walking out of the building with a three-game losing streak, and given what's expected of them, and especially in the Lightning's case, what they accomplished last year, that'll be a storyline that gains some momentum for whichever team loses tonight.
These are two of the teams, you go to Vegas, you'll get the worst odds on to win the Stanley Cup, i.e. you put down 100, you're not going to get much back. They're very good hockey teams. They're also very hot places for pressure, I would think, if they don't have substantial runs. That's a bit of a tight wire that both John Cooper and Mike Babcock are going to have to walk this year. They need to have sustained playoff success, both of these guys, I'd think. Never mind contractual status and a new deal for Cooper that was announced before the postseason. These are fan bases that probably can't be won over entirely until we get to the spring.
Exactly. I mean, no matter what they do in the regular season, I don't think it'll matter really until the first, second week of April and things get going for real. I mean, I found it interesting today that John Cooper mentioned that he feels as though the Lightning are carrying around the burden of last year still a little bit, that, you know, the way the things went with their 62-win season, but then being swept by Columbus, that it's still kind of something that they're working through mentally. He told me after the scrum that he's made a point of, you know, talking about it a little bit with the players. He feels like it's kind of an elephant in the room type of situation. And so they're both, I mean, look, you have rosters like this, a lot's expected of you. And you know, there's not a whole lot you can do to surprise anyone until you get in that playoff tournament.
Let's turn to some action from last night. Last we spoke, or maybe a week ago, not on Tuesday, a week ago, you had noted that wouldn't it be something if Elias Pettersson was named the captain? Well, it wasn't. It was Bo Horvat, but it did get me thinking about that a ton, and it's an idea I've floated to a lot of Canucks fans and people we've had on from Vancouver, and they all thought that wasn't a bad suggestion, but where are we at on Elias Pettersson, the leader? Because I don't think we're far away from him being, you know, not only the most important player on the ice, but maybe the most important guy off the ice.
Well, for sure. And you know, I think it mirrors a little bit of the decision the Toronto Maple Leafs just had to make, where you've got, you know, really good, you know, guys that are a little bit older that make sense. And then you've got sort of a young superstar that I think you could make a case for as well. And you know, I don't think, especially in Elias Pettersson's case, you know, it makes a lot of sense to me that, you know, they're not going to add that to his plate. I mean, he's still a young guy. It's just his second year in the league. I think especially in a Canadian market, wearing the C, you know, comes with a lot of pressure, expectation, obligation, what have you. And you know, I haven't spent a ton of time around the Canucks the last few years, but I hear nothing but good things about Bo Horvat. So, you know, it feels like he was probably the safer choice at this point in time, but I wouldn't surprise me somewhere down the line. I don't know how it'll happen if we see Pettersson wearing the C, because he's, at this point in time, the most important player to that organization.
And there's lots to cheer for those Canuck fans who finally got a home game. They absolutely aerated Jonathan Quick, who all of a sudden, it's been a very rough few years, and there is 4 years remaining on that contract that pays him almost $6 million a year. What in the world do the Kings do here?
I don't know. You know, I still see a team. I know they had a spirited game in Calgary a couple nights earlier, and won that game. But you know, I still see a team, as we discussed earlier this week, that's going to lose a lot of games. And, you know, you have to wonder if at some point Jonathan Quick is a guy they look to move. You know, you do run the risk that, you know, I don't know what kind of value he'll have if things don't get better. And let's face it, he's still playing behind a pretty porous defensive team at times. And so, you know, it's a tough situation. But, you know, I do think your untouchables there are Doughty and probably Kopitar, and the list probably stops there, even though, you know, there's other guys on that team that helped win those championships in 2012 and 2014. And so, you know, it wouldn't surprise me. I don't think it's something that's being actively discussed at this moment. But if, you know, at some point here down the road, we're hearing about Jonathan Quick trade rumors and seeing if he's a guy that they can move on from.
Here's the issue. I don't think they're good, and I'm with you. That's not a great defensive group, the one that moved Muzzin last year and might move Martinez this year. Jonathan Quick had an .888 save percentage last year in 46 appearances. Jack Campbell had like a .928 save percentage. Calvin Peterson had a .924. The issue isn't that, you know, well, it's just a bad team. It's that the young guys are outplaying him by a considerable margin, and their best two netminders, they probably only got one of them in the NHL right now. That's how bad it's been for Quick.
Right. And you know, I thought it was interesting that Campbell started the game in Calgary, actually, because they had a few days off prior to that. You know, I don't know. I'm certainly not a goalie expert, but it doesn't, his career is not trending in a way that, that gives you encouraging signs. And you're right. I don't know at this point if he has the value of, you know, where he would have been even 2 or 3 years ago. I think that the opinion of him was much higher. And certainly you talk to those Kings guys, they believe he was absolutely central to them winning the Stanley Cup, that it was not, those were not championships that would be won if Jonathan Quick wasn't between the pipes. But, you know, perhaps Father Time has crept up on him, or injuries, or what have you, because you're right. If you play 46 games and you're below 900, I mean, that's, you don't even want your backup in that territory, let alone your starter.
And a similar storyline, not identical, but there's still significant term left on Corey Schneider's deal. He's now 2 years post a double hip issue that he had cleared up with surgery, and he got lit up for four from a Philly team that just come back from Europe. Where are you at on Schneider and the Devils' options in net? Because that's a group that improved quite a bit, both up front and on the blue line in the offseason, but the questions remain about the crease.
Well, he's in a tenuous spot with them. You know, there's some hope, I know, from the Devils' end of things that Corey Schneider's come through his issues. You know, I think they were patient because, you know, last year they looked at players who had had similar hip type of surgery that he had, a groin surgery. You know, I think Pekka-Rinne was one, and there was a couple others that, you know, basically took them about a full year after the surgery to get back to where they were, but that they had encouraging results once that period of time had passed. And so, you know, I still think that they believe in him. But, you know, if he has a season this year where the performance isn't there, you know, he probably won't be long for the situation. You know, I think he's already lost some of his standing. You know, spent a lot of time last year, even when he was healthy, as a backup. And you know, he had a few good performances, I know, towards the end of the season that gave the organization some hope. But, you know, I think that their patience with him will only go so far now that we're in year two post-surgery.
Maybe it's just me, but I feel like when a franchise is so bad for so long, you can't help but develop a bit of a soft spot for them, unless they're the Oilers. The Buffalo Sabres last year caught everyone's imagination with that 10-game winning streak, all those one-goal victories, the overtimes, the horns going, Rick Jeanneret, that fan base that has been so famished for success. And we saw a bit of it last fall. Here they are again with Ralph Kruger. Last night, it was a home game against Montreal. They win. And this Olofsson kid's fitting in all right on the top line. Tell us your thoughts on the Sabres in a tough Atlantic division.
Well, and you didn't mention those sweet new jerseys they unveiled over the weekend. So they got a nice look to go with some of that charm of a team that's been beaten down and is trying to reverse its fortunes. You know, Olofsson's an interesting player. I actually asked Victor Hedman about him this morning because they were both from Orange Skoltsvik, home of the Sedins back in Sweden. And he said that he was predicting before the year that Olofsson would score 30 just because
he
said he doesn't see many NHL players have the kind of shot that he does. And just he could tell from the time they spent on the ice in the summer and you know, the guy's mindset that he believed he was going to have a breakout campaign. And lo and behold, we're here, you know, just a little over a week into the season. He's already got four goals. You know, he's taken up a spot on their top line. And you know, that's what this team needs. I mean, obviously, I think they needed a bit of a jolt behind the bench. You know, things have been so rough there for so long. And to me, Ralph Kruger is the perfect kind of guy, very upbeat guy. You know, players seem to like and respect him. You know, I don't think this group need to be beaten down anymore, if you know what I mean. I don't think tough love is what the situation called for. And you know, now if they get a few more game-breaking types or guys like if Olofsson is able to have a pretty strong season, if 30 goals, as Victor Hedman predicted, you know, come for him, I think that can make a big difference. So it's a little bit less weight on Jack Eichel's shoulders to provide offense. And so, you know, it's early yet for them, but you know, I think that there's reason for hope just because they have some pretty good talent in their lineup. Rasmus Dahlin year two is going to be even better than it was last year. And I think a new coach and a new message can make a difference in a team that's kind of been through as much as they have.
Why they held conversation around this station over the course of the off season and now into the regular season has been about what we should expect from a San Jose Sharks group that is, yes, another year older, but also still with a lot of talented players. And yes, the same questions about their crease. What's the temperature like for the Sharks?
Well, it's ratcheted up a lot. I mean, you start the year the way they have, having trouble producing offense, you know, missing Evander Kane for 3 games because of his suspension to start the season. You know, I think that they are feeling the heat. And, you know, they're a veteran team. They've been through it. But, you know, Martin Jones has come under some degree of fire there. And, you know, I don't know what the long-term plan is. You know, and last year I felt as though he was an impediment to them. He played well in stretches of the playoffs and you know, helped them get through. But, you know, that's an interesting organization. I think that's one to really keep an eye on. They've spent right up to the cap now, basically, with the Marleau contract. They're clearly all in on trying to win in this moment. And when you start 0-4, I mean, you're going to hear a lot of questions. And you know, they're in Chicago tonight, so it doesn't get any easier for them there.
Is there a solution out there on the market to help them in net? Or is that something that is not going to be palatable with the contractual obligations to both Dell and Jones?
Well, I don't think that they see what we see. You know, my sense is that they still believe in Martin Jones and that they feel some of the questions or scrutiny that he's been under is not warranted. So, you know, I don't think at this point that they're looking in that market, that's something that they're too focused on. I mean, it could get that point, I guess, if his performance doesn't pick up the season and, you know, they might have to start thinking that way. But, you know, at this point in time, I really don't believe that San Jose thinks he's a problem. And obviously they gave him a pretty big contract a couple years back. And you know, I think that they're happy with him. But we'll see if that proves out, if that's the right way to go.
Okay, well, let's tweak that a bit then. So they're committed to Jones, but what I noticed last year was that they weren't comfortable going to Dell. And it's not a good contract. It's almost $2 million a year as a backup for the Calgary area guy. He hasn't been great. Is there a platoon solution, or are you at the point where you're going to have to bribe someone to get rid of that Dell money to make space? I don't know if I see a solution. I guess I'm just sort of throwing darts here.
No, I don't see one either. You know, there's not an obvious guy to me that's available. You know, I know Pittsburgh has 3 goalies and a lot of people like Tristan Jarry and Casey DeSmith as potential backup options. I mean, maybe you can make a deal with them because they have a lot of other things going on in their organization and, you know, might be willing to take back Dell. But, you know, that's probably going to be the biggest issue for San Jose is that it's going to have to be a money in, money out trade. And Obviously they're going to have to attach a sweetener to it, I would think, to make that kind of deal happen. And so a little surprised not to see them address it in the off season. I think it doesn't get any easier to do it now. And, you know, really, I think what the conclusion I'm going to draw for you here is until we get it, you know, into November or December, I think this is going to be what they roll with. I don't see it changing, and I don't think they have a lot of other options at this point in time.
Yeah, fair enough. Interesting. I've been more optimistic on the Sharks. I still think if you have a healthy Erik Karlsson and Brent Burns doing what Brent Burns does, you're going to be okay. But if it goes the other way, those that are a little more down on the Sharks, the fun little Duchesne-type situation is their first rounders held by Ottawa this year as part of that Karlsson swap. That could get ugly.
Oh, wow. I didn't even clock that. That's a good point. I mean, I just wonder, you know, they lost 40 goals with Joe Pavelski. And you know, their core players are getting up there in age. I know Pavelski scored those 40 goals at a pretty advanced age. But, you know, I think it's telling to me that they resisted the urge to sign Patrick Marleau in the summer. They sign him 3 games into the season, and he goes right on their top line. I mean, that says more about them than him, I think. And I say that with respect. I got a lot of time for Patrick Marleau, but at this stage in his career, he's not the first line player on a team that has big ambitions, I don't believe. And so, you know, they're in a tough spot. It's amazing. There's so much time to go. We all saw what happened in St. Louis last year, that team that, you know, had huge expectations and just stumbled for half a season and then got it together and won. I mean, everything's possible, but, you know, I think in that city, I think around the Lightning and the Leafs, as you mentioned, if they keep losing, you know, that there is a lot of pressure that builds. And even at this early point, people do start to feel the heat.
Okay, any other hot spots for us in terms of potential trade or GM rumors? I know it looks like Honka has signed a deal overseas, but it's got an NHL out, and that situation is starting to look more and more like Jesse Puljujärvi, doesn't it?
It feels that way. You know, I think the sense is that the Stars might have waited a little bit long to, you know, reach this point with the player that you know, if they were going to trade him, the summer might have been a better time to do it. And I know that Jim Neal mused about it in the media, actually, all the way back at the entry draft. So I don't suspect it wasn't for trying. I mean, he's a 14th overall pick from 2014. He's not old, and he certainly has some pedigree. And I really think, especially in an organization that has Haskinen, that has John Klingberg, that there's just not a lot of need for what he brings as a more puck-moving type of guy. And so I think it's good for him to go back and play in Finland. I mean, there's really no downside, I guess, unless he were to be injured. But, that at least if he plays, I think teams can go see him. And I think what's similar to the Puljujärvi situation is, I don't believe the Oilers have ruled out trading him even in season, now that he's leading the team in scoring over there for Karpat, I do think in some ways he might become a little bit more of a movable asset. We'll see if the same thing happens for Julius Anka, who, Dallas wants, something along the lines of a third round pick for. So we'll see if anyone gets an injury on their blue line and looks in that direction here from the NHL side. But in the meantime, he'll play over in Finland.
Any other rumors out there? It is still early. It seems to be chatting with some pro scouts the other night. Everyone wants to see their contingency plans if plan A isn't working. And usually it's the 10 to 15 game mark that the phones get busy again. Is that consistent with what you're hearing?
Yeah, I mean, nothing seems to be truly on fire yet. Obviously, we mentioned the Sharks' slow start. The Dallas Stars had a couple losses out of the gates before winning in Washington the other night. A few surprise teams, the Oilers winning a few games and James Neal contributing to the cause. But, I don't feel like anyone really knows what they have at this point in time. And so it really isn't typically till November we see any moves, any sort of, I don't know if you call it desperation or panic or the need to make some kind of statement. So it's pretty quiet going as I'm ruffling around for some Saturday headlines at this point in time.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, enjoy tonight. That should be fun. And I guess you can just maybe turn up the heat on the losing coach tonight, Tampa, Toronto. That'll be fun.
That's my plan. Here in Toronto, we just careened from one crisis to another. So
Babs has been draping himself in the Raptors gear, I've noticed. He's no dummy, huh?
He's no dummy. He's a lot of things, but he's not a dummy.
Thanks, Chris. Good chatting.
Okay, thanks.